98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
The Suns have one superstar. His name is Devin Booker, and he's really great at being Devin Booker. Sorry, but the Suns need even more. They need a franchise player who lifts his teammates, like Steve Nash did. They need a franchise player who inspires his teammates, like Charles Barkley did. They need a player who knows how to maximize his talents and the talent of everyone around him, and that is not Devin Booker, at least not yet. Now, maybe I'm being hard on D-Book, but I did not like what I saw on Tuesday when his return to the lineup made his team worse. And I recognize that Booker has had a rough season, dealing with an assortment of injuries and serving as the team's emergency point guard. And in fact, those two things might even be related. And everything about Booker and this basketball team cannot be accurately judged until the Suns acquire a real point guard, the player who sets the table and runs the offense. But so far, Booker has given us very little to complain about other than this. He's polished on and off the court. He's capable of making your jaw drop with outrageous offensive performances. He's even donated $500,000 a year for the next 5 years to Phoenix Suns charities. But I want D-Book to start focusing on what he can do for others on the basketball court. And at the very least, I never want to hear that the Suns failed to show up for a game ever again, not when you have a $158 million player leading the way. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by Chapman BMW. Two great locations, one great experience. Visit them online at chapmanbmw.com. All right, second half of the program. We got a lot of fun stuff, a lot of ground to cover. We're going to start talking some Phoenix Suns, who have another road test against the Toronto Raptors. Jarrett and I have set the bar very low. Don't get blown out. Okay? Don't get blown out. It's a start. It's what I want to see.
I'll say this. They've got no chance, and it's all Devin Booker's fault. All of it.
Oh, it's not. No, you don't.
It's all his fault.
No, you don't have to be snarky.
This is how he got with the Ayton criticism, too.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, he took it very personally.
We live in the most reactionary sports city on the planet Earth.
I don't know.
I'm not just saying it's you, and I'm not just saying it's you, Jarrett.
Well, no, I think you are.
Well, you're part of it. You're part of the problem. The Suns had a bad game against a really good team. An 11-win team and a bad game against a really good team.
You've mentioned.
It was a disgusting performance. I can't defend the performance.
So year nine into no playoffs, your standards are it's okay for an 11-win team to get blown out by the Pacers in the first quarter. That's okay because we're still growing. Is that your official stance?
Big picture, kind of, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to attack individuals that are saddled with not much to work with.
Was that attacking or expressing an opinion? You call that attacking?
Okay, expressing an opinion.
Okay, because there are a lot of qualifications and qualifiers and asterisks and all that. I'm recognizing Devin Booker has had a rough season. I'm recognizing that. I'm recognizing that a lot of what you think you can judge and blame, you think you can apportion, you cannot, because this basketball team has been handicapped from day one by their owner and their general manager and their interim general manager, who was assigned to get a point guard moments after the firing of Ryan McDonough and still has not done so. So, okay, and that all being said, fine. It is what it is. It's another wasted year. But the truth of the matter is this. You can be as tolerant as you want of this basketball team, but it's not like I'm the only one saying this. We just talked to Kevin Arnovitz, who I think was much more forceful in his analysis of what's going on. I think you can look at the Phoenix Suns and say they have to pass six teams in the offseason just to be the number eight seed in the playoffs next year, which would be, if they don't, 10 years without a playoff berth. So you be as patient as you want. I'm done with it.
I want the Suns to be better than they are. But look, I'm not going to pin most of the blame on Devin Booker. I'm certainly not going to pin most of the blame on DeAndre Ayton, because to do so, you are kind of acknowledging, yes, they are finished products as far as becoming NBA players. And I don't think either one of them is. I really don't. The failures to me are front office related. That's why they're in the situation that they're in.
I do agree with that.
I don't think Devin Booker's a finished product. And as I illustrated earlier today, I think the Suns are doing him a disservice by anointing him officially, unofficially, however you want to say it. Oh, he's kind of like the James Harden type of point guard. James Harden is a freak of nature right now, what he is doing.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it's fair to pin that on Devin Booker.
Yeah, no, you're right, because a guy like Luka Doncic can come into the league as a rookie and instantly lift up the Dallas Mavericks. You're right, because it never happens. You can't judge a guy after 4 years in the NBA.
You want to go down the Luka road?
Sure.
Have you seen that Luka's last, like, 6 or 7 games?
Yeah, he's a good player. I got that breaking news alert. I get it, like, every 20 minutes from a national outlet. Mm-hmm. I think tomorrow is actually Luka Doncic Day. It was going to be Deep Dish Apple Pie Day, but they changed it, and now it's Luka Doncic Day.
Okay. Okay. The only reason I'm picking on Devin Booker right now is because what I saw Tuesday night. And
by the way, lifting Dallas, they're 13th in the West.
They're one of the teams the Suns have to pass.
Okay, they're 13th in the West. Future.
Okay.
So now you're... Oh, Luka Doncic has elevated the Dallas Mavericks to be better than the Suns.
Oh,
that's the bar.
I don't know.
That's a pretty low bar.
He's a true facilitator in the NBA. Those guys make other guys better. It sure seems like they dig him in Dallas.
Yeah,
put it that way.
He's a good player.
Sure seems like he's brought a lot of excitement and a lot of rejuvenation in Dallas.
Where was this in June when the Suns had a decision to make?
Yeah, where was what?
He was sitting over there in the web, the big guy.
Kellen Olsen. Yeah.
Kellen Olsen was the only one in this building that said the Suns should take
Doncic.
Yes.
Yeah, there weren't many of them.
And I'm not reversing on the pick.
And I haven't yet either. I'm getting close, but I haven't yet either.
After 45 games?
No, I'm not going to do it after 1 year.
He's had 5 years of professional basketball experience.
Well, then that 5 years of professional basketball experience shouldn't have been marginalized. And it was. I heard Gambo talk about how terrible the European League was. So you shouldn't.
It's the second best league in the world.
Yeah, right, exactly.
He used to cry, though.
And he used to cry during games. What happened to that? That was bad information. Luka Doncic and I've said this before, if there's anybody immature, it's DeAndre Ayton. Immature in a good way. In a very endearing way. $158 million bucks should get you a lot in the NBA. And I want to see the Phoenix Suns and Devin Booker. I want to see him influence this team and his teammates, not see what happened on Tuesday night. I will retract some of this and say that my feelings on this may have been exaggerated if they do not get blown out in the first quarter against Toronto.
Not specifically to you, but this is what frustrates me. Tuesday night was ugly. It was a bad performance. It was a bad 48-minute performance coming off their best game of the year. Is it disappointing? Yes. But the reactionary nature of everything is Devin Booker came back. The Suns are worse with him. He scored 8 points. He's Carmelo Anthony. He doesn't make anybody better. What if he goes out and scores 45, which he's perfectly capable of doing on any night in the NBA, which not a lot of guys can claim.
Uh-huh.
But then what? Then is he an all-star?
No, I'm not talking about point production. We know he can score a lot of points. I said it very clearly in the blast. Devin Booker is great at being Devin Booker. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Everything.
What does that mean?
It means he's great at scoring copious amounts of points. It means he's very polished. It means he says the right things. It means he's a good ambassador. I want to see him become a winning player by lifting his team up. We've heard this is not criticism in a bottle or in a vacuum here.
Okay.
I'm not the only one who thinks this, and you know it. There's a lot of people who are questioning whether Devin Booker is a winning player or not. I don't go that far yet, but what I saw Tuesday was just very hard to reconcile. How a team without him plays hard and fast and tenacious defense and beats the Nuggets, and then they go on the road with plenty of rest and a practice in between, bring back their $158 million guy, and they're down 38-19 in the first quarter. Yeah, okay, Indiana's a good team. So's Denver. That's it. Can we get some consistency of effort? That should come from your leader.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about consistency of effort. It's a night-to-night proposition. You just brought up Denver. I'm pretty sure in Denver, they're not questioning whether or not Jamal Murray is a good player because he had a bad game against the Suns.
No.
He's younger in his career than Devin Booker is.
You're right. They've got a better thing going in Denver. And again, in Denver's got a point guard. The Phoenix Suns do not. And that's not Devin Booker's fault. I want to see this basketball team elevate with Devin Booker and not act like, oh, he's back. And I know they don't feel that way, but that's what it looked like in the first quarter against the Pacers.
Bad game.
Okay. Rectify it with a good game.
In case you missed Kevin Arnovitz, he was pretty pointed in his criticism of the Phoenix Suns.
This is a manifestation of something much larger.
Sure. It is.
Which is an organization just in disarray.
Yep.
And, like, this is what happens. Look, they could put together a package for Dennis Smith. By the way, they're also going to have a top five pick again this year.
Mm-hmm.
So their point guards in the draft. Go get one.
Yeah.
And don't develop them and then complain about this 3 more years. like, at some point, it's just, like, Phoenix, the Suns really annoy me. And I grew up kind of like, I loved the team of a decade ago.
Yeah,
like, I love the market. I love what Suns basketball has always meant. But, like, watching this, they have been endowed with nothing but picks. Like, at some point, take responsibility, you know, for the resources you've been given instead of they're like this kid who goes and breaks their toys and then I need another one. Oh, good, here's another top five pick this year. Because you don't know how to develop a team. Because you don't know how to create a managerial structure that fosters any kind of progress as a basketball franchise.
Wow.
Now, I'm not laughing at our situation. I just laugh when people are able to express themselves so snarkily. With so much sarcasm. You know what I mean? And that was pretty funny. The broken toys thing is pretty good. Look, I do hold most of my animosity towards the ownership and the management of this basketball team, which has just been ridiculous. Just ridiculous over the course of 9 years. We're about to get into a 10th year. You go 10 years without a playoff berth, you are really, really good at being bad. And it's just an awful thing to be part of. Especially in a market that wants to get behind this basketball team so badly. Just give me some consistency of effort. I think they're on to something here with this Kelly Oubre, D'Anthony Melton, defensive spark. D'Anthony Melton, he's one of these guys. You see his numbers when Devin Booker doesn't play? He's one of these guys that really seems to be freed up when Devin Booker isn't on the court. I'm not tying the two together because D'Anthony Melton is not an upper echelon player to begin with.
No, but he has Devin Booker doesn't play, D'Anthony Melton's one of those guys that benefits by having the ball in his hands more.
Good point. And
he has an opportunity to distribute the basketball better.
Yep.
The model for Devin Booker, again, it shouldn't be James Harden. It should be Klay Thompson.
And I like that model. I don't know if Devin Booker would like that model because I think Devin Booker would like to have a much higher volume of shots, don't you think? You think you'd want to be a Klay Thompson?
Who cares how you get your shots? I mean, I would much rather find a spot that I'm comfortable from shooting from and wait for the ball to come to me in rhythm and knock down shots. I mean, Klay Thompson is brilliant at it. Klay Thompson doesn't have to work that hard offensively. He just doesn't. That's a machine. The Suns are far away from that, having the pieces to that machine to make it easier for Devin Booker. I don't think Devin Booker wants to play point guard.
I don't think he
wants to be the facilitator.
No. No,
that has been thrust upon him by the failures of the front office.
He's been schooled to be a scorer. He's never won in the NBA. He was a sixth man in college. There's a rite of passage he has to go through here. And the Suns have anointed him as the guy. So as the guy, you've got to find a way to lift up everybody. And that's what I want to see from him. I want to see a good game. Just be competitive against Toronto. You don't have to win. But look like you enjoy each other. Show me some connectivity. Show me some competitive edge. Don't get blown out in the first quarter.
Well, I don't know if you heard Gambo talking about this earlier this week, but in terms of any friction with this team, any malcontents, any guys not getting along, and you know, he gets good information. So once Trevor Ariza was shipped out of town, he hasn't heard any rumblings about that.
Yep.
That this is a team, they're not complaining about their coach, they're not complaining about their playing time, the guys at the end of the bench, and Bender, and Anderson, and Troy Daniels, who inexplicably doesn't get minutes on this team, they're not complaining, they seem to be a cohesive unit. Yes, there's going to be moments of on-court frustration, or even bubbling over into the locker room where young players are going to snipe at each other. That's what losing teams do.
Yeah, okay.
But it still shows a want to get better. I mean,
Are you a fan of putting Kelly Oubre in the starting lineup to address these lackadaisical first quarters?
I would, because the slow starts have been way too frequent. Everybody can agree on that.
Yes.
To come out flat and then really set the tone for the rest of the game and have, you know, 48 minutes of garbage time, nobody wants that. Here's James Jones yesterday when he was asked that question by Burns and Gambo. Have you considered putting Kelly Oubre in the starting lineup?
Of course. You know, we're always examining ways to get off to better starts. You know, I know Coach talks about it. I know internally we talk about it. I know the players talk about it amongst themselves because they're always just trying to find ways and searching for ways to compete and win games. So Kelly brings a dynamic for us that I think could benefit us in the starting lineup, and we'll see.
And he also said there, you know, he was asked, is there a negative to having Oubre in the starting five?
Well, like anything, it isn't linear. So you can take a guy like Kelly who's been instrumental with our second unit. I think our second unit, you can tell just by looking at the numbers, when our second unit comes in and plays, they push our team. You know, they make up ground that we may lose with the starters. So it's tricky. You take a guy who's a big piece of your bench unit, who's normally competing and is probably the best talent on the floor against second units, and you thrust them into the starting unit, and now you may lose some ground with your second unit. And so for us, trying to find that consistency throughout the course of the game where we can stay even, you know, that's elusive, but we'll keep searching for it.
The problem with it to me, Bick, is that, you know, when you look at the Suns' slow starts, when those do occur, it's not just a slow start on one side of the floor. It's not just, oh, wow, they didn't play defense. It's a complete, like, offensive-defensive breakdown.
Yeah.
And I thought James Jones' comment there, it's not linear. I mean, there's nights where the starting lineup will come out, and they'll play their eight-minute stint to start the game, and it's very competitive, and then there's a step back when the bench comes in, and there's going to be nights where the opposite happens. I mean, that is indicative of what happens on young, bad basketball teams.
Okay.
But I'd be willing to try it. I would be willing to see what it looked like.
Me too.
Because I think if you move Mikal Bridges, he brings defensively a lot of that same intensity. It's not as, and I don't mean this as a knock, it's not as showy defensively. He's a really tough defender because of the length, the active hands.
He's got super long arms.
I mean,
yes.
He surprises
Comically large arms.
Yeah, I mean, he surprises right ball handlers on a nightly basis by getting his hands on basketballs that he shouldn't get his hands on.
You just nailed it. There are a couple things. It's like the Josh Cole mentor deception in pitching. Everyone thinks they can take him deep and they can't hit him,
mm-hmm.
or at his best. You're so right about this. D'Anthony Melton is fabulous at playing defense between the ears. He's very active and he anticipates passing lanes and he surprises a lot of guys by just pure outright thievery. Mikal Bridges, you're right on the money. His freakishly long arms surprise these guys very, very frequently, and it keeps happening on a night-by-night basis. I'm looking at this, and I wonder if starting Oubre, Melton, and Bridges together in a starting lineup is going to give you the energy and tenacious defense. Do you have enough scoring with Booker and Ayton rounding out that starting five? Would it be good to have Tony Buckets come off the bench? Or is it incumbent upon you to reward a guy like Tony Buckets, who not only changed his game, but changed his range going into this year?
He's changed his game. He's honed his skills. He's become a more complete offensive player. And I think the Suns could do themselves very well by exploring trade possibilities for TJ Warren. I like him as a
yep.
player. He's closer to his ceiling as a player than I think probably anybody on this roster. Would you agree with
wow,
that?
Wow, that's well said. Yes. Yeah,
but
absolutely.
To his credit, he has improved his game, and I think he might bring – if you really want to overhaul this, if you want to expedite this process of becoming a winning basketball team and a playoff contender, he might be the guy. Realistically, because even though there are people bad-mouthing Devin Booker, you can't trade him. You'd kick yourself.
No.
I think TJ Warren could be the guy that could bring the most in return in terms of making facelifting this roster.
Yeah, and I think Igor Kokoschkov kind of sees a little bit of what I'm saying. Clearly, he's not going to feel as strongly as I do, because he has referenced Devin empowering his teammates, learning how to empower his teammates. It's not just going, okay, I've shot the ball four times in a row, I better pass it. It's doing it organically in the flow of a game and really just kind of taking pride in that. It's I know Steve Nash was an anomaly, but Steve Nash, the beauty of Steve Nash was not what a great facilitator he was. It's that he was that great of a facilitator while leaving that much of his personal scoring on the table. The guy was an amazing shooter, yet he, okay, I don't have to do that.
Yeah, but I will say this as well. The ingredients were different.
Yeah,
it was
true.
It was a different stew. I mean, Steve Nash wasn't, as a rule, facilitating an offense that was made up of 20 and 21-year-olds. It was polished veterans. It was a different landscape.
True. True.
My voice is going.
Either way, just, you know, it's just been too long. It just, my nerves are getting frayed from this team.
We could agree on that, too. We don't have to disagree on everything.
No, we don't.
To the
no, it's
we
all
can
good.
Agree on that.
No, it's good.
Everybody
it's
wants
good.
This team to be better.
Right.
Yeah, Suns and Raptors tonight. Raptors coming off a loss in Boston, after which Kyrie Irving admitted that he called up LeBron James and apologize for being that young player
and
on that
and
team
I wanted
that wanted
to give him,
too much.
And I wanted to give him so many props for that, and you just kind of like unplugged that.
Well, let's see what it leads to. I mean,
no,
very,
right.
very recently, Kyrie Irving on a veteran championship quality roster has not been a great leader.
No.
So to talk
or
about
a great teammate.
Learning as a
I
leader,
know.
It takes more than talking about it. 5:30 is the tip-off tonight, 5 o'clock pregame with Al McCoy and Tim Kempton here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The greatest show on grass returns to the TPC Scottsdale as the Waste Management Phoenix Open tees off on January 28th through February 3rd. Head to the rewards page at arizonasports.com for your chance to win tickets to this year's Open. Today's Cardinals offensive coordinator update is... Yeah, there is no update. Is this a problem? We'll get into that next. Bickley and Murata live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
I mean, let's face it. You have success as an offense. If you're a young coordinator, you're with a young coach, and that's what people covet right now. So, you know, from an attractiveness standpoint, I think that part's attractive. I think if you looked at the roster right now, that might, you know, might make you take a step back a little bit and go, man, I hope I get another opportunity instead of just this one opportunity. But there's only 32 offensive coordinators in the National Football League. So if you get that opportunity, you have nowhere else to go. Obviously, you're going to take it.
Mark Schlereth on our show yesterday here on 98.7 FM talking about the attractiveness level of the Arizona Cardinals offensive coordinator job when you consider all things. Cliff Kingsbury is the head coach with the play calling duties. By the way, I can't hear that song without thinking of my favorite Frasier Crane line from Cheers.
Which is what?
During the night of his bachelor party when he quoted the lyrics to that song. Everybody have fun tonight.
Wang Chung.
Everybody Wang Chung tonight.
You know where they Wang Chung got their name? You ever hear that bit of trivia?
No.
Allegedly, if you're playing guitar, downstroke, you get a wang. Upstroke, you get a chung. Wang chung. That's what.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's weird where bands get their name from. Nobody has a better backstory than I do. But really, it's like you had a band, you're going to call it the. Really?
There's meaning behind it.
Old people call it the.
Like the Smiths, for instance. I don't know if you ever heard of that band.
Vaguely.
Yeah.
Vaguely remember them.
Right, vaguely. Never heard of it, Gracie.
All right, the reason why we play that soundbite from Mark Schlereth asking the question about attractiveness is, here we are, Cardinals have not named an offensive coordinator yet.
Uh-huh.
There are people that are upset by this. There are people concerned by this. Ideally, you'd like to have somebody fill that position just for, I guess...
So we can quit talking about it?
Yeah. Amen to that, brother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Again, something we can agree on.
Yeah.
Tom Clements was the last guy interviewed. He has an extensive coaching background, 65 years old, did play professional football for a long time in Canada, has worked with Aaron Rodgers. I don't think Tom Clements, you know, by virtue of his age, by virtue of him being out of the league for the last two seasons, I believe, I don't think he's got designs on being a head coach.
No.
In the NFL.
No.
I think that's exact. I'm not saying he's the guy, but that's somebody that has the attributes that the Cardinals should be looking for
exactly.
as a support staff member to Cliff Kingsbury's offense.
Exactly. No, no naked ambition, no backstabbing, just a guy who can add to the mix in a neutered job that is not going to give you a lot of personal fulfillment, certainly very little glory, maybe zero glory,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if Cliff Kingsbury's offense takes off, then Cliff Kingsbury is the man. If Cliff Kingsbury goes 3-13, Steve Keim's out of a job.
Yeah. Cliff Kingsbury might be too.
Maybe. Oh, geez. Can you imagine that? 2 1-and-dones in a row? That would be special.
Yeah, it's happened recently in San Francisco.
Yeah, it has. You're right. They have released Super Bowl odds for 2020. And not surprisingly, the Cardinals rank in the second to last tier of teams. There are about eight.
Second to last tier?
Yes.
Wow.
There are there's about 10 teams that are all at 66 to 1.
Things are looking up.
Cardinals, Bills, Bengals, Broncos, Lions, Jets, Raiders, Bucks, Redskins. 66 to 1. The team with the worst odds for next year, the Miami Dolphins. 100 to 1.
Really?
Yeah.
They don't even have a head coach yet.
It's funny. Chiefs are 7 to 1. They're favorites. Rams are 8 to 1. Saints are 8 to 1. Bears and Patriots are 10 to 1. Those are your favorites for 2020. So the Cardinals are not, even though the Cardinals have a lot of resources to turn this thing around, anywhere between $70 and $76 million in cap space, 9 to 10 draft picks, including the first pick in each round, potentially in the trade market for Antonio Brown. People still don't see it.
Well, and it applies to the Cardinals this year because they were a last-place team in the NFC West, but that whole prospect of going worst to first, it happens every year in the NFL, seemingly. It's been the rule as opposed to the exception. I just think right now at this point, and I've seen some publications that have ranked all eight of the last-place teams and their chances to elevate to the top of their division, and nobody gives the Cardinals a chance. We don't know what the Cardinals look like for 2019.
No, we don't. No, it's a good point.
I mean, they've got a lot of draft picks and high draft picks in every round. They do have cap space. I mean, there's going to be an overhaul to some degree of this roster. I just don't think you could do that right now. And the greatest unknown of all of it, even though they have their head coach, is what does this look like? What is Cliff Kingsbury's offense, the innovation, his design, what does that look like in the NFL? No. And I don't think we've ever...
I don't think anybody knows.
I don't think we've ever seen anything close to that kind of question before in the league, at least not for a long time.
And when you start talking about what I was just talking about, Super Bowl odds, when you have what is considered to be a unanimous franchise quarterback in tow, you should not be 66 to 1 to win the Super Bowl. For instance, let's find the Browns on here. Where are the Cleveland Browns are 25 to 1. The Baltimore Ravens, 33 to 1. The New York Jets. So, okay, the Jets are 66 to 1 as well. Mm-hmm. So the Jets and the Cardinals both have young guys who are considered franchise quarterbacks, yet they have very little push or belief in Vegas.
Well, because, and I think Sam Darnold probably outperformed Josh Rosen this year in rookie seasons.
Yeah.
Neither one of them had a great year, but.
Both
there's
of them
still
got
so
their
much
head coaches fired.
Still, so much unknown with both of those guys. And again, like you just said, both of them will be working with a second head coach slash offensive coordinator in year two. I would seriously hope that the jump Josh Rosen makes in year two is greater than that of Sam Darnold, because he's starting from a way lower spot.
Let's hope. Now, Mel Kiper is going to join us right at the top of the 1 o'clock hour. He's got three quarterbacks in the first round. We'll talk to him about this. He's got Dwayne Haskins going first at number 6. He's got Kyler Murray going 13th.
To Miami.
13th overall.
Who's the third one, by the way? I didn't scroll that far down. The third quarterback he has.
Who would that be? It would be...
I'm trying to find it right now.
Yeah.
It's taking a long time.
No, it's all right.
Daniel Jones of Duke going to the Patriots at 29.
Huh. That is such a Belichick move, drafting a quarterback out of Duke, isn't it?
Yeah, it would be a genius.
Yeah.
When Daniel Jones is a household name in 5 years.
Mm-hmm. So, to me, this is going to be, it's going to be fun because having the number one pick in the draft, this is going to be an experience. The whole thing has not been celebrated the way the Suns were when they won the draft lottery because that required winning something, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Cardinals had to lose to Seattle in the last game of the season to get the number one pick.
Mm-hmm.
Suns had to win a draft lottery. So that created like, ah! I'll never forget Dave Burns' reaction as long as I live. Nobody did that the moment that Seattle won that game on December 30th. But I do think that when this starts to get closer, it's going to be interesting because the number one pick, as we have learned with the Phoenix Suns, it's a great blessing, but it comes with a lot of second guessing because there's nobody ahead of you choosing first. Duh. And as a result, you've got your pick of anybody. And all it takes is one guy to do better than your guy, and now you've got second guessers.
Yeah.
And that's the danger.
My mind started to think back to last year. Like, let's say it was a year earlier that the Cardinals had the first pick with a need at quarterback and that class that came out last year where they would have gone. And I know Gambo said it, that he thinks they had Baker Mayfield rated the highest, but Josh Rosen second. How much different would things look if Baker Mayfield was here? How much would his skill set have been hampered by a broken offense, injuries, and a scheme that was just shoddy from the beginning?
An absolute lot. Yeah. And that's really going to be, to me, that's going to be the key thing here. How do you fix an offensive line with a GM who's tried and failed three different times? I hope he's got a better methodology this time.
Yeah. Look, he's attempted it.
Yeah, they've spent money on it.
And they've had a lot of bad luck.
True.
But you can also say, has that money been spent wisely on players that were deserving of that money? I think that's maybe the biggest question when it comes to offensive line construction under Steve Kime.
And I think in 2018, the answer is no. I think it sounded good when they brought in Andre Smith and when they brought in Justin Pugh. But hearing guys, and it's real easy for NFL experts now to say, yeah, I don't know what the Cardinals were thinking. I didn't think that guy was that good. Real easy to say it now.
Yeah. Have you subscribed to the Bickley and Murata podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android, and you'll never miss any of the show. It's a Bickley and Murata podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. Coming up next, we're witnessing something historic in the NBA, but I'm not sure everybody appreciates it. We'll get into James Harden's antics next. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Floor Burns with Bickley and Murata.
Seven seconds on the shot clock. Harden steps back over Karutz. Got it.
That's three of James Harden's 58 points last night in the Rockets' overtime loss to the Brooklyn Nets. We'll get back into the exploits of James Harden in a second. There has been another coaching hiring made by the Arizona Cardinals. Mike Kliss, writer in Denver, has covered the Broncos for a long time. He tweeted out, former Broncos coach Greg Williams has been hired by Arizona as a DB's coach per source. He reunites with Joseph Robertson, Kugler, and Grosso. Not the Greg Williams that
1G
was
talking
about.
That guy.
Just 1G, probably not the same cantankerous attitude, but the DB's coach, Greg Williams, formerly of the Broncos. So it's kind of a Denver reunion.
Yeah.
Denver had one convincing win all year, and it was against the Cardinals.
And we got five coaches from Denver joining the staff? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It used to be Pittsburgh West. Now it's Denver West.
Okay. All right. I mean, I get a little bit weirded out with that. When you get that many coaches, it's like, don't you know any other people across the league? Don't you have homes? Okay. Whatever. I mean, it's... To me, I'm at this point in time where these names are just place markers is what they are.
Very much so, until we see the product on the field.
Yeah, until we see the product on the field.
Was there a DB's coach out there that you would have said, oh, that's a home run?
Exactly. You know, if Ronnie Lott was coaching the team, maybe.
Is he even a coach?
No, but that's what I'm saying. I'd be like, wow, look, that's Ronnie Lott. Man, that guy was tough.
Let's hope he doesn't suck as a coach.
All right, exactly.
James Harden, 58 points last night, 18th consecutive game of 30 or more points. what he is doing on an individual basis is nothing short of remarkable. And I was trying to think, because we can all sit here as sports fans and consumers and pinpoint the performance that like dropped your jaw the most, like an individual game.
Yeah.
But to do this 18 straight games, to do it, at a time where his team has really needed him to elevate with all the injuries they have. I mean, did you see the starting lineup last night for the Houston Rockets?
Well, there's no Clint Capella. There's no...
Eric Gordon was back and played 21 minutes.
Okay.
So it was Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Gary Clark, Austin Rivers, and James Harden. And they used four players off the bench, including Marquese Chris, for 6 minutes and 25 seconds.
Former Suns great Austin Rivers.
Austin Rivers has played well ever since that trade.
Oh, he's playing a ton of minutes,
too. Oh, he's playing a ton of minutes. And again, that's one of these things that really annoys me about this basketball team is how do you have an asset like that and just go, okay, you know what, just take off. We don't need you. To me, it's just like, it's so amateur hour.
Now, granted, Austin Rivers would not be playing that same workload had Chris Paul been healthy.
Well, Austin Rivers is going to be an embarrassment to the team when it became public that he wanted no part of the Phoenix Suns. Whatever. We don't need to digress. He's doing this with a misfit patchwork lineup.
I mean, when you talk about streaks like this, neither one of us, I don't think you were alive for Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak, were you?
You are the worst.
We were both alive.
Visperata.
It is the worst.
That's not that absurd. What was that, 1956?
It was in the
40s.
Oh, I see.
It was 56 games.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought it was. It was 61 home runs in 61. That's okay.
You were alive.
Yeah, says the guy who still does Jarrett the Magnificent or whatever, Karnak the Magnificent.
Jarrett Karnak.
Says the guy who quotes Milton Berle.
I can look forward to a Milton Berle quote on Friday's Sports Kebab. We were both alive for Pete Rose's hitting streak in the 78, I think that was. I was very young, but he got up to 44 games.
Do you remember the guy who broke the streak?
Give me the team.
The Atlanta Braves.
Rick Camp?
I don't know what. Gene Garber.
Mm.
Remember him?
He was a reliever, though.
He was.
He got the last out to kill the streak?
Yeah. Why I remember it is Gene Garber acted like he won the World Series, and Pete Rose was really ticked off about that. And I'm thinking, Pete, come on. The guy stopped your hitting.
Well, he was really pissed because he had money on him extending the streak
That's right.
Hitting streaks, because they last so long, and it could be just like a bloop base hit.
Yeah.
Not as, I don't think as spectacular as what we've seen from James Harden.
Yeah.
Can you compare this to anything?
No, I can't. In terms of just sheer volume, what is happening with James Harden is really kind of popping brain cells in my head, because the year began, and there were all these tremendous transcendent performances, and James Harden seemed to not be part of the conversation. And I'm like, what's going on? And all of a sudden, maybe 6 weeks into the season, he just went boom, and he hasn't stopped. And it just keeps getting more and more absurd, these performances. Scoring 50-plus on a night when he's allegedly dog-tired. Scoring, 43 on a night when the other team was propping themselves up for stopping him.
Mm-hmm.
And now this, when you start stringing together 50-point performances, this is something that hasn't been done since Wilt.
Oh,
and Wilt Chamberlain is as much mythology as he is legend. So I'll tell you what, and I'm sorry for misspeaking earlier because I looked at the schedule and I saw Lakers at Rockets, LeBron and Harden. I forgot LeBron is out. But it's almost now where you're going to go out of your way to watch James Harden play just to see where he's going with this thing.
Over his past 20 games, Harden is averaging 41 points. The I'm doing this by myself narrative is certainly bolstered by the fact that when you consider over the last two games, James Harden has scored 115 points. Not one of those points has been assisted on. It's hard to assist on free throws, I will say that.
No,
They have not figured out a way to do that yet.
Now, when you hear that stat, do you roll your eyes or are you impressed that he's doing it without easy setups, without easy dimes?
More impressed. Again, okay. Then I go to the aesthetic of it because it is so much isolation. It's so much James Harden against the world. Look, he's really good at it.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily the most fun type of basketball to watch for the four other guys on the floor. for the fans that are in the arena or for anybody watching on television, but it doesn't make it any less amazing to me.
Mm.
Because James Harden is basically saying, yeah, I'm going to do this, see if you can stop me, and nobody can stop him.
Yeah, I know.
13 50-point games in his career, past LeBron James. Sixth on the all-time list behind Rick Barry, Elgin Baylor, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, and Wilt Chamberlain. He shot 19 three-pointers last night.
Mm-hmm.
The Rockets shot 70 three-pointers.
Okay,
might be the most amazing thing, too, and we're not giving the Nets much credit. This one stat from Wednesday night. Rockets, despite leading by 6 points in the final 30 seconds of regulation, coming into Wednesday night, over the last 20 years, the Rockets were 682-0 in situations like that. They'd never let a six-point lead go that late and lose a game.
Yeah.
And the Brooklyn Nets deserve some credit for that.
Yes. Real quick, what I'll say about this, well, I'll save it. It's I'll say it real quick. It says a lot about James Harden. He can go 50 plus points on a night his teammates shot 50 plus three pointers.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
70 plus. Join Kevin McCabe.
50 for his teammates because James shot 19.
Okay, yeah. Kevin McCabe and AZ Preps live this Saturday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Chick-fil-A off the I-10 and Florence Boulevard in Casa Grande. You'll have the chance to win free Chick-fil-A for a year, plus Suns, Coyotes, and Renaissance Festival tickets. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details on the Chick-fil-A High School Basketball Roadshow Series. Coming up, his first mock draft was released today. He'll join us next. We'll talk to ESPN's Mel Kiper Jr. straight ahead on Bickley and Murata.